State Rep Julie Alexander joins us just about every Friday. And Julie, though you guys aren't in session, it's still been pretty busy.
Yeah, I was in Lansing this... Good morning, Greg. I was in Lansing even this past week with committee hearings as I serve on health policy up there for that, up there just to take care of some constituent work in Lansing that needed to be done. And next week, we're back in Lansing with both committee and session.
Big story overnight. Lansing School District and Flint both say they're going 100% virtual to start the fall season. That might be the impetus, maybe, for a lot of districts. I don't know. What are you hearing?
It might be. Each community, when we look at the return to learn plan that the House put out this last week, Education Committee also met. I listened in to that testimony on that set of bills, and reaching out to superintendents in our Jackson community to see what issues or concerns they might have with it, as well as teachers and parents as we look at this legislation. But what I hear is we are empowering local communities to make those decisions in working conjunction with their health departments. Now, everyone appreciates that because we like that local control, that uniqueness to each community in our state. It does also present some challenges. Even within a county or a school district, not all schools are going to agree. So that then creates additional challenges. When we look at our Jackson community, we know that we have a common calendar. We have a common career center, and we have the common uniqueness of our special education services. If districts start veering, either whether it's their calendar, whatever might become different, that's going to create additional challenges for everyone. We also we're competitive. Because of school of choice, a family can decide not to send their children to the district that they reside in and go to another district, and those dollars follow those children. So that's going to add some additional challenges as well.
Yeah, budgets are going to be, they're going to be scrambling, right?
There's that uncertainty. There's the uncertainty of sports. We're in a place right now where if a school's supposed to be starting in 1 month and we don't have answers and solutions, again, right now, everything is being dictated through the executive branch. We as legislators will continue to work. We'll continue to look at policy, what policies, procedures, legislation we need to put in place. But as you well know, we can do all this work. We can pass it in the House. We can pass it in the Senate. But if the governor's not willing to sign it or even acknowledge that we're going to be moving forward in this direction, we are completely at her whim and mercy these days.
But if the parents don't send their kids to school, you've got nothing.
So what services can be provided to parents at home to ensure their students are still learning? So the virtual process, I think a lot of parents got just a taste of it last spring. Mm-hmm. I've heard some parents say, oh my goodness, I have so much respect for teachers. I don't know how they do it. Some parents will say, I'm not going to send my children back to school if it's mandated they're wearing the masks when they can be in a safe environment. Otherwise, I hear other parents that say they're going back no matter what. Again, it becomes divisive for families, for community members, for everyone. Just this, the unknown, the uncertainty.
Yeah, it's to say the least, not a good situation.
It's they're challenging times. Yeah. They really are. And I wish we had more answers. We continue to move along. We are making progress on the budget, working with the governor and moving that forward. So those are good steps, but that's what we should be doing. We should be working collaboratively with the governor on all these pieces. I'll tell you, my staff and I still hear from constituents of the 64th District every single day. I am returning calls. I am answering emails. They're contacting me through Facebook and my personal cell number. People stop by to see me when I'm out and about. And people want their voices heard, and that is the value to a representative democracy.
Well, you're a former teacher. Should buildings be opened up, or where do you stand on that?
Where do I stand? So personally, I will respect a family's decision. And if a family maybe has a family member that is high risk or is immune deficient in some manner, I will respect, personally, I will respect what other family chooses to do. If I was a parent with a school-aged child, I would be sending them back to school. When you look at the procedures put in place, when you look at the data of the number of children that have been infected, I would take all that into consideration, and the value of the academic process, the fact that all kids don't learn online, all parents may not even be home, to put all those pieces in place. That would be my personal choice that my husband and I know would make. But we're in a unique situation. So what happens to all of our school districts in Jackson County now that we now have two large school districts in the state of Michigan that have said we're going to start out virtual? Will this add to the domino effect? I don't know.
Mm-hmm. You guys talked about drug pricing this week.
Health policy.
I'm into that.
Yeah. I mean, and I've got several people that reach out to me on a regular basis complaining about the high cost of their insulin.
It's insanity.
It is. It is. So why do we have this high cost? What has caused this to happen? Same with EpiPens. When all of a sudden we were mandating, oh gosh, what are we at? 5-10 years ago now, mandating that EpiPens be all these places and in the schools, and that just increased the demand so significantly, then the prices started going up. What generic product is available? What research and development is taking place? Where and why? What are the root causes of this? Why are we so much higher in the United States than other countries? We know that people deserve fairness and that transparency, the ability to know what they're paying for that drug. And I said to a group of lobbyists that asked to meet with me after we had session, I said, you guys reminded me of middle schoolers. You all just kept pointing your fingers at each other. It's their fault. It's their fault. It's their fault. Everyone wants to blame someone else for the high cost. Ultimately, the cost is still high, especially for those with uninsulin. The other issue that was brought to my attention, quite often it's the high deductible plans. When Obama put certain things in place in regard to affordable health care, the higher deductible plans became more popular. So is their insulin that high rate because of that high deductible, or are there other factors involved? You know, some people just say, well, ship it in from Canada because Canada sells the insulin at such a lower price. Well, Canada does not want to sell to us, and they do not have it to sell to us. So although in theory that sounds like an easy, simple fix, it becomes more complicated, and it's also federally illegal.
So where did that end up?
Again, there's going to be a set of bills that will be introduced, and I look forward to hearing more testimony on that. In health policy, we also discussed certificate of need in regard to medical facilities, medical equipment, the regulations and stipulations in place that limit expansion. In this specific case, it was on psychiatric units, not being able to expand to areas where there's no psychiatric care, but there's a board and a process and regulations they have to go through to expand it. Is that the best? Is that the best situation, or is that simply over regulation? And then in health policy, the third issue we also addressed recently is the fact in Michigan right now, COVID, due to the governor's executive orders, COVID-19 patients, COVID-19 positive individuals are allowed to go into a nursing home that they were not formerly a resident of. And when you look at the high number of deaths in southeastern Michigan, 68% of the deaths happened in those nursing homes. Statewide, we're well over a third of the deaths were happening in our nursing homes in our state. When you're bringing COVID-19 positive patients into a facility, were bringing that disease in to contaminate who were otherwise healthy individuals.
So why would that ever happen?
That is the governor's executive order as it stands right now. So we are introducing legislation that would prohibit that from happening. If they are COVID positive and they need to go back to the facility or the residence they lived in, and they can be put in a safe quarantined environment where proper protection and protocols are in place, that's a different situation. But to simply take an individual who's COVID positive and put them in a facility in which they were not a resident of before, that we know has caused the high escalation, and that has caused the outrage. So we do what the legislators do. We have the conversations. We bring forth legislation. We talk with all the stakeholders. Now, the question then would become, it is passed the Senate. It is now on the way going through the process through the House. The question then would be, would the governor sign it? And if she doesn't sign it, then everything stops.
So what? Anything else going on?
A lot going on. Just meeting with people on a regular basis, still working on employment insurance claims. There are oversight committees going on in the Senate. There's an oversight committee hearings next week. Again, they are open to the public. You can listen to them online. You can be a part of the process. I will be going in and testifying to the Oversight Committee in the Senate on behalf of some correction officers that have reached out to me with some concerns early on. So we know that we need to hold everyone accountable. All I know is what people share with me, and I have been asked to relay some of those stories, so I will be doing that. In the House side, we are looking at a variety of issues as well, but again, the unemployment insurance agencies challenges are on the top of my list. I think I mentioned, Greg, now it's probably been a month ago, the individuals that continue to reach out to me. And I create a priority list every week of individuals that still do not have their claims solutions. And we create a list every week. I wish we could do more. I wish I could just go into the program or had someone that I could reach out to and say, fix this for this person. They are priority. This is an emergency. Or they've been waiting since March or April. For you as a department to say that no one's been waiting that long, when we know that's not the case.
Part of the issue is fraud.
That is a piece of it, but I also am questioning some of the software because, if the director's going to sit there and say, we don't know of any cases that have been there that long, there must be a glitch in a system somewhere. But again, we always are looking forward to collaborating with those departments, same with Secretary of State. A lot of phone calls this week, Greg, individuals being pulled over, being given tickets for expired tabs on their license plates, have been helping individuals there. Where it gets a little detailed is there is an executive order that states if you have expired plates, tabs on your license plates, you cannot be ticketed. But that's only if those tabs expired the month of March, which is when the pandemic occurred, when we were called into the state of emergency. If your plates expired in January or February because you had them in storage, you just didn't spend that money to get the plates, the tabs, because you weren't on the road with that vehicle, then you still can be cited. So we get a lot of calls like that. So we work with a lot of departments in Lansing, and I'm learning something new every day.
The bottom line is to renew as soon as possible.
Fashion.
The Soper signage.
Yeah,
we talked to John Hayes with Connecting the Dots program, and they raised all the money, so that was great.
That doesn't surprise me because that's our Jackson community stepping up. Yeah.
Cool story.
It is. And those are the kind of things that during challenging times like this, as we just went through and 4th of July holiday, makes us stop and cause and reflect and give gratitude for those not only that have served and give that ultimate loss, but for the good things going on in our community and just to show our respect and admiration to the family.
So you can contact Julie.
Absolutely.
At this number.
Absolutely. My office number is 517-373-1795. My personal cell phone number, 517-740-9982. If it's an unemployment issue, insurance issue, I would suggest emailing Julie Alexander at house.mi.gov. And again, I am honored and excited to be a part of the 100th legislature serving the 64th district, which consists of the city of Jackson, Hanover, Concord, Pulaski, Spring Arbor, Sandstone, Parma, Summit, and Napoleon Township.
Thanks, Julie.
You're welcome.
Appreciate it.